Alright, it's a nice place. We've been such a nice place, and I'm very grateful to all organizers existing here, and most of all my old friend Paul Wigman, that I'm here. I will speak about several things which can be under such umbrella as Laplacian growth. You will see in a minute. Let me tell you a few things from classical mathematics which are not traditionally in the mainstream of mathematical physics. After Newton discovered this fundamental potential, in next century or so, it was found that ellipsoidal shell, I'm speaking about two confocal ellipsoids, have a constant potential inside, in the hollow.
Sorry.
Dima, please. Excuse me?
Two homothetical.
I apologize for mistake. Two homothetical ellipsoids. Then, a century later, Lord Kelvin found, using conformal invariance of three-dimensional Laplace equation, that if he performs inversion, which is one of permissible conformal transformations in 3D, and with respect to arbitrary point with arbitrary finite radius, so we will have not very trivial new shell after a standard inverse transformation. He found that potential created by this shell, outside this shell, is inverse distance from the center of inversion. In two dimensions, this would be equivalent to say that this is potential, which is equivalent to the Newtonian potential of a point-like body or point-like charge. Then he posed a question. He got interested. He posed the question how to describe all list of, as he named it, barycentrical bodies. Barycentrical bodies are bodies with one hollow inside, uniformly occupied by fictitious matter with constant density, which create potential outside equivalent to the spherical potential, point-like potential.
Sorry, Mark, so let me step back a little bit. So at which point do you switch from three dimensions to two dimensions?
Just a few seconds ago.
So
when I written this instead of that.
What's the statement about three dimensions?
That in three dimensions, also you can perform inversion, and the resulting shape produces Coulombian potential outside, which is equivalent to point-like potential, which is just inverse distance. Which is
ellipsoids, right?
Yes, ellipsoidal shell, yes.
The first statement was that inside you have a constant potential.
Yes.
Outside you don't know what it is.
We may know, but we are not interested, yes.
But if you do after that,
the inverse. Yes, then the whole interior maps to the exterior here.
Ah, okay.
And other way around.
The center of inversion is inside.
Yeah, something like that. So Kelvin in 1860, I forgot when, pose the question how to describe barycentrical bodies, which are bodies with one hollow, which produce point-like potential, classical Newtonian potential, outside. Next, I would like to mention name of Poincaré, who found that if one studies potential, if one investigates potential in 2D or in 3D, it doesn't matter anymore, actually. One can deal with, one can sweep, so to speak, balayage in French. One can sweep all distribution of matter in the bulk to the boundary and then investigate potential in terms of contour integral, which is much more than this, but what I said, but he introduced this approach. Next name would be Gustav Herglotz, German mathematician, who in 1911 found interesting, made an interesting observation that there is one-to-one correspondence between singularities of two following analytical functions of single complex variable. Singularities of gradient of this potential outside the matter, it is harmonic. It is analytic. If we analytically extend it inside the matter, we will see some singularities. And these singularities, remarkably, correspond one-to-one to the singularities of conformal mapping, which maps area outside the unit circle in this auxiliary W plane to the domain, say for simplicity, but not necessarily, outside this domain Z in plane Z, which I will consider as a physical. Yes, Ilya?
So just a second ago, it was logarithmic potential. Now it becomes one.
No, I said gradient of potential. That's why I differentiated logarithm and obtained what you can see.
So it's not a potential anymore.
It's not potential anymore, yes. It is gradient of potential, force. Yes.
And the domain omega is what you call D now, or which is?
Yeah, yes. Domain D, no omega. Well, so singularities of this conformal map, which are all inside unit circle, except infinitely remote at point, which is a simple pole, have one-to-one correspondence with singularities of this function. Next step perhaps has been done by Russian mathematician Novikov, Peter Novikov, he got interested in this problem, in the problem of inverse potential problem, people call it. What we know is this potential or force in the far field. What we also know that matter is uniformly distributed over the domain.
Sir, let me again, I'll stop.
Ilya, feel free to stop, sure.
So this function is defined in the Z plane.
This function is defined in Z plane, while this function is defined in W plane.
In what sense you have one-to-one correspondence?
For instance, one-to-one singularities, well, it means that if this has some singularities of specific kind with specific residues, singularity of the same kind has this function, the same number of singularities, and there is an explicit formula how to calculate singularity of one of these two functions based on another, or other way around.
But then, I think you mean inverse conformal mapping from the complement of D into the domain.
No. I mean what I said.
No,
it does. Because all singularities here have one-to-one correspondence to all singularities of this function, which are outside.
This function is analytic outside. The matter is inside D.
No, I said outside. I didn't say inside. I said out to out. Perhaps I misled the audience by shadowing wrong domain.
Yeah, but the matter is inside domain D, right?
No, from outside to outside.
Where is the mass?
Mass?
Density, yeah.
If we are speaking in this term, mass is outside.
Oh, okay.
Fine?
But your D is labeled as inside.
It's D plus. It's D minus. And this is boundary, which is D plus minus D minus. What Peter Novikov has proven? Oh, inverse potential problem is posed like that. We should find the domain D, which is occupied uniformly by fictitious matter, if all we know is Newtonian potential created by this fictitious matter in far field. It can be our exterior problem, it can be interior problem, which is here the case. I mean, matter is outside, coming back to your remark. Novikov has proven that in two dimensions and three dimensions, the following is correct. That it does exist singly connected shape with analytical boundary, exists and unique if a domain is a star-like, which means at least one point we can always find in the domain such that all rays cross once and only once the boundary. Then, small historical overview of inverse potential problem I finished. I may mention one more remark. Among class of inverse problems, this is perhaps particularly challenging one. For instance, I want to give you a small illustration why it is more difficult than, say, inverse potential problem in some loose sense, inverse scattering problem. Inverse scattering problem, as you know, as most of this audience know, deals with linear integral equation, while inverse potential problem deals with nonlinear equation on each step. Just for simplicity, suppose our domain has this description in polar coordinates, star-like. Then all we know are these moments. It is coefficients of multipole expansion of this Newtonian potential, which are, by definition, integrals over D, there minus, D minus, dx, dy. Please have a look here and agree with me that here we have unknown function r of theta, in an integer negative power for each k. Just to give you a small snapshot why.
Like the previous case here, the mass is uniformly distributed, right? So rho is 1.
Yes, rho is 1. Yes. 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 Rho is 1. And yes. Let me erase everything.
I'm sorry it could be such a pest, but since you keep switching from exterior to interior, I think since D minus is exterior domain, then Z to the K should be not in the denominator because you are looking at the moment.
No.
At the expansion, where expansion is analytic.
No. If I'm speaking about exterior, wait. Yes, you're right. It's D plus here. Yes, right. And plus here.
No. Don't change it twice because it makes it the same.
Wait.
It's correct.
It was correct before, I believe.
Now it's perfect.
No, I disagree. Now it's bad and before it was good. Let me not dwell on it and just say one sentence. That because the origin is taken inside, it's clear that only such integrals are finite. For instance, you can, let's assume this is unity. If you expand it with respect to large z, you will see multipole expansion and, yes, so.
It's an analytic function at the origin, so the powers of Z should be positive.
Yes, you're right. Therefore, this is expansion with respect to positive power of Z. Clear. Unless you feel it's not. I think it is. Well, I should mention that in different context from approximation theory, another mathematical object appeared in 60s of last century. It was introduced by applied mathematician Phil Davis. It is so-called Schwarz function. A simple way to understand this object is to imagine a curve, say analytical curve, say even closed curve on the plane, which has such implicit description, changing Cartesian XY to conjugate ZZ bar, we can resolve this equation, which we can always locally can, in terms of one variable. This result has a name, the Schwarz function. It's interesting object. It has several properties. For instance, let's speak about real axis. Let me challenge the audience, at least those who is not familiar with this object. What is the Schwarz function of the real axis? It is just z itself, because this equation is equation for the real axis. What about unit circle located in the center?
One over z.
You're absolutely correct, Ivan. One over z. Interesting fact is that unless it is a circle of finite or infinite radius, Schwarz function is not meromorphic. It does necessarily have less trivial singularities, generally speaking, cuts. It follows from, it is just a consequence of such facts that the only meromorphic image of sphere is sphere.
Do we have an example? Can you give an example of that?
Yes, I can. The simplest example, Andreas, is Ludwig. I forgot your first name between these two. But I mean, sorry. Yes, let's take ellipse with A and B as a semi-axis. It's simple example. Let's switch from Cartesian to conjugate coordinates. Let's resolve this quadratic equation with respect to z bar, because it is quadratic equation with respect to z bar. Here is the answer. Let me write it with accuracy of coefficients, because it takes just f square minus another constant times z. It's very straightforward. F stands for focus of this ellipse. You can see from this formula that even such simple curve as ellipse already contains a cut which connects two focuses. This Schwarz function is just generalization of well-known Schwarz symmetry principle from theory of one complex variable. It is a generalization from reflection with respect to circles to the reflection with respect to more arbitrary curves. And the best way to fill this property is to connect Schwarz function with a conformal mapping. Say this is conformal mapping F. Schwarz function is this object. This is conformal mapping. Because this is analytic function, it always permits us small analytical continuation. Probably small but finite analytical continuation. Therefore, both these points, if they are quite close to this contour, also we can take Schwarz function of it. At the same time, both of these points are images, conformal images, of these two points, which are also reasonably close to the unit circumference. From this simple picture, we can easily obtain the following formula. The Schwarz function is nothing but composition of these two functions. I can write it in different way. Which is?
Mark, does it matter whether they take in the exterior or interior map?
Regarding conformal mapping?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. There are many conformal mappings, and there is still one single Schwarz function, which is of significant help. I deliberately didn't mention here whether it is exterior or interior, or just strip to strip. This is, I would say, another way to think about Schwarz function. This was a unit circle. Enough about Schwarz function. I would say last little piece of mathematics, already contemporary mathematics, which will be on relevance for physics, which I will which I will speak later. Recently, I believe since 60s, it is an activity which is called quadrature domains. There are such domains on the complex plane that integrals over this domain from analytical function can be represented as a linear combination of values of these functions or derivatives of these functions in several points, which are called quadrature domains. These domains are remarkable and are intimately related to properties of the Schwarz function, which you will see shortly.
For any function?
Analytic function inside the domain.
The points are the same for any function? Points.
Points are pertinent to a particular domain.
Independently on function,
yes. But they do depend on domain D. Yes.
So any and the coefficients as well, right?
So yes, coefficients also depend on properties of this domain.
The orders of the derivatives and the position of the ZKs are all.
Yes. 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 Group of very good mathematicians worldwide work on this interesting subject, and I have a privilege to see in this audience one of active workers in this area, Dim Havinson, who will correct me if I will tell something not entirely exact in this subject.
Sorry, before, the ZKs were in or outside the domain, or does it matter?
In general, they belong to domain.
Okay.
And they are called quadrature domains. Enough about mathematical introduction. Let me now switch to physics. Let me tell you about few nonlinear free boundary problems. Perhaps first one belongs to Stefan, Austrian physicist, the same famous Stefan who, together with Boltzmann, is known to us from college. He just inquired what is the law of propagation of boundary between solid and fluid. If solid is, say, propagates because fluid is under cooling. He used heat equation, boundary condition without inclusion of surface tension. And he was able to solve this problem in several simple cases, which do not have many degrees of freedom, such as sphere, cylinder, circle, plane. Traditionally, this list of problems people call a Stefan problem. Also, in the petroleum industry community, it was an interest of time dependence of boundary between viscous fluid, usually oil, and less viscous fluid, usually water. Because when oil mine is found underground, and when initial fontaine of oil stops because pressure settles down to atmospheric, the only way to take additional oil is to inject another fluid inside, which is of course much less viscous than oil, because oil is one of the most viscous fluids, say water. And underground, this less viscous fluid pushes more viscous one, and it is intrinsically unstable. So it gives rise to many fingers, pinches off some islands. Nobody knows what is underground, but some experiments in two dimensions in Hilly-Chaussel indicate this behavior. This was another group of problems which was interested, I would not even say physicists, but engineers. probably first physicist who started to investigate free boundary problems on more serious ground was Geoffrey Taylor, who was leader of British mission at Los Alamos during the war. When more heavy fluid falls down to less heavy fluid, interface between two becomes unstable, and you can see fingers of air or less heavy fluid, which just rise up. Interestingly, if we perform this experiment in the cylinder, just imagine very long, very high cylinder, open from one side, half full of fluid, inviscid fluid, and just overturn it, and you will see how air goes up, and eventually you will see one finger which propagates upstream with permanent velocity. This phenomenon is called Rayleigh-Taylor selection, because it was a challenge to calculate why velocity is such which is observed in the experiment. After Taylor came back to Cambridge, he decided to investigate similar class of fluid-fluid unstable motion, which is motion where less fluid, less viscous fluid pushes more viscous one. Similar to what I described from oil and water example. Particularly, he took two parallel glasses closely situated in horizontal plane. And from one side of this rectangle from top view, he pushed water toward the oil, which had sink from this side. He saw that initially almost flat interface becomes unstable. Later, in non-perturbative stage, where deviation is no longer small, he observed, together with Phil Safman, who is now in Caltech, a rise of many fingers. Then he noticed that the fingers compete. And finally, one single finger suppresses all others and starts to propagate with a constant velocity. Together with Safman, they found shape. They found different shapes of the stationary profiles, which move with constant velocity to the right. This simple profile, where lambda is parameter, continuous parameter, which geometrically means portion of this finger, how much it fills of this width. And while he got continuously degenerate family, they obtained, in experiment, it was always very close to 1/2. So they posed a selection problem in 1958. Why nature selects 1/2 while there is a degenerate family of different profiles?
And sorry, the explicit form, functional form, is it supposed to be known exactly, or is it?
It is just simple. You just take this stationary profile, use these equations, and you just obtain this. It's very straightforward thing. It's solution of several equations. This is one equation, which implies incompressibility. This is another equation, which in scaled units shows a relation between velocity field and field of pressure in viscous domain. It's Darcy's law. Pressure along the boundary was taken to be constant. Why not zero? If to neglect surface tension. And kinematic identity also was used, which implies that normal derivative of velocity of fluid molecules coincides with velocity of the boundary. And also asymptotically pressure was fallen linearly. Ilya?
So this boundary condition, is it a consequence of the V equals minus grad phi?
Yes, it is a consequence.
You don't have to write it separately, right?
I should not write it separately. I'm merely reminded about kinematic identity.
Corollary from the second.
That's what I'm saying. So it's not...
It's corollary, yes. But this is asymptotic.
But if you say that it extends to the boundary, then...
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is consequence, which is kinematic identity.
So you see, the motion of the boundary is the motion of the fluid.
Mm-hmm. You can come up with another problem where you've got a stationary boundary and then you get soft propulsion. And that's another problem. So you need to specify the boundary and the fluid.
Mm-hmm. Wait a second. Why do you say it's a consequence? I mean, certainly there are models where there's surface tension and then the pressure is not equal to zero.
Matthew, I'm not speaking about this boundary condition. Yeah. Matthew, I'm speaking about this, which is nothing but kinetic, which is just kinematic identity, yes. Now, let me mention next interesting puzzle, experimental puzzle. Should I better say numerical puzzle, which is DLA, which was partially discussed here by Hastings, I believe, and others. Perhaps audience knows what it is, but in few words, from the perimeter of a large system, say in two dimensions, small Brownian walkers were created randomly along the perimeter. Then they were permitted to perform discrete jumps uniformly in all directions or only in, say, north, east, west, south, if it's square lattice or other lattices. And the rule of the game is that once they find themselves one of next neighbor of the single black side, say in the center of system, they accrue, we continue this process, and eventually when number is significantly large, number of these black sides in the cluster, the obtained fractal-like picture was investigated from point of view of fractal multifractal dimensions, which were obtained to be universal. If we are speaking about lattice, there are some constraints on this universality in long term, but I don't want to dwell on it now. Still, there is a challenge for theoreticians since 1891. When two physicists from University of Michigan discovered this, how to obtain analytically this, at least this lowest Hausdorff dimension, which to my best knowledge, at least in the canonical setting, is within this limit. It's universal and robust. Next example is also an interesting example. Physicists from Ecole Normale Supérieure performed interesting experiments in a Hillishaw cell with different geometrical setting, wedge geometry. This is hard walls, top view. Through this hole, non-viscid floor, usually compressed air, is pushed, and it it displaces more viscous fluid oil toward the asymptotics. Again, after initial transition period, experimentalists observe this kind of self-similar structure, which they called finger. And it was always universal, reproducible, dimensionless number. Ratio of this angle, theta f, occupied by this finger, to the angle of this wedge. This number, which depends on W, on wedge angle, also was of interest because similar approach which Safman Taylor performed for rectangular geometry also produces continuous family of this of these patterns. Last experimental fact I would like to mention is rather new. It's last year, and I even was part of this. It was done by experimental group of Harry Sweeney at the University of Texas in Austin. Excuse me? Yes. In this way. Matthew, I mean, this is this. I mean, this is F. Yeah, this is F. No, this is 1/2, right? Yes, something like this. In the second part of my presentation, Matt, it will be more details about this. Let me tell you that experimental group of Harry Sweeney investigated a fractal-like cluster of air-penetrated oil. There are many, many different fingers, fjords, and they found very interesting fact that fjords, which are oil outlets left behind when less viscous fluid propagates, these fjords have statistically universal angle of opening, which is 8 degrees. Well, plus minus, I believe, with accuracy of 10%. It was a statistics over hundreds, if not thousands, of different fjords on different pictures in different geometries, radial geometry and rectangular geometry. This universal number is also...
So by rectangular geometry, you mean the same as Safman Taylor?
Yes, Ilya, precisely, yes. But prior to this single finger is formed, just before when you have plenty of different fingers. Most of fjords do not have straight walls. Most of fjords have such curved walls. And what experimentalists did here, they wrote a central line, and each time they performed angle between these two tangents in the middle, up to approximately this area, because later it is already goes to zero. And they found just this universal number, which is also a puzzle for selection. Well, yeah, how to fix it in order no longer be embarrassed with this?
We have a pocket, so we can just try putting in a pocket here.
I would appreciate it. Uh-huh.
So if you don't mind, we can put it this way. Okay?
Yeah, sure.
How large is the scatter in this angle in these experiments?
Scatter is 1 degree approximately. Less than one degree. It's in worst case, we can say it's 12 degrees. Mostly, it's 10 degrees of accuracy, this 8 degrees. 10%, yes.
Not degrees.
Yes, yes.
10 degrees.
Yes, yes, yes. All right. Now, let me come back to some equations. In 1944-1945, applied mathematicians from Moscow obtained this equation for the moving boundary parameterized by phi in two dimensions and deformation real number t is time. This equation, their name are Galin and Polubarinova-Kochina. They simultaneously obtained this very simple equation.
Sorry, what is phi?
Phi is real parameter.
It's some parameter.
Real parameter which parameterizes an interface. This equation is direct consequence of this formulation. It's easy to...
Mark, historical question. Did we have the right-hand side which was more general? We have several sources and also the several strengths. I mean, strengths of the source can be...
Well, if you want to be... if you want to be specific, one of these two papers considered more than one source, and right-hand side was different. Time right-hand side was different. But now I give a sketch where I think it would be enough to speak about one. It's so simple that I would show this to you. Let's just elaborate this equation in a radial geometry. Radial means everything is the same, but asymptotics is logarithmic, which is equivalent to say that we have a charge at infinity or a fixed stock of viscous fluid. Because normal component of velocity of boundary is identically this expression, where L stands for the arc length and subscript stand for partial derivatives. It is just the identity. And because P, as you see from here, is harmonic function, and therefore, by virtue of Cauchy-Riemann, it has normal derivative of it equals tangential derivative of its complex conjugate, which sometimes people call stream function in hydrodynamics. Then, if you look at this equation and notice that left-hand side is nothing but Jacobian of transformation from Cartesian xy to LT, then after changing parameterization from arc length L to any arbitrary parameter phi, real from 0 to 2 pi, say, in closed contour, you will obtain this equation. Where psi is monotonic with arc length, and therefore this thing follows. Excuse me?
How did psi disappear from the equation?
Because I divided both sides on the right hand side and noticed that this ratio is this left hand side after I switched parameterization from arc length to psi.
So psi becomes stream function becomes the parameter among the factors.
Yes. From here follows that stream function is exactly the polar angle in this mathematical plane W, which performs conformal mapping. Therefore, Z as a function of exponential of I phi is already conformal mapping from the exterior of unit circle in the W plane to the exterior of non-viscid domain, which propagates. Mm-hmm. I would also say that another interesting experiment, which I have not mentioned, was discussed seriously in community of metallurgists who investigated how dendrites grow, dendrite of one phase grow inside another metallic phase under out of equilibrium. And it was also a similar story that we may obtain infinitely many different parabolic-like profiles which propagate inside another phase. It's similar mathematical description after some idealization. And also question was why nature always selects one specific velocity. Jim Langer, that time, worked in Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, and he got interested to this selection problem, and I believe we should tribute to Jim Langer that all these many of these different pieces of applied mathematics and physics were finally ready to do theoretical physics. I would like to say that selection problem, both for dendrites and for this Safman-Taylor finger, has been solved in middle of 80s by introducing small isotropical surface tension, which merely means isotropical for Safman-Taylor finger and anisotropical for dendrites. It means that level set, it means that the boundary is no longer level set of this harmonic function, but instead it is proportional to curvature with a coefficient sigma, which is surface tension, and which is very small in the scale units. It was a long story, which I don't want to discuss in detail, how several groups found that they should apply surface tension in a non-perturbative way, because all expansions with respect to surface tension, all members vanish because it's essential singularity. And then they used what they called asymptotics beyond all orders, just a version of WKB, and they were able to find, to select one member of this continuous family. In this way, they explained both why one half selects and why this specific dendrite select. However, in the latter case, surface tension Jim Langer introduced was not isotropical number, but it also added small anisotropy of growth. Meanwhile, this equation was appeared to have remarkable mathematical features. For instance, this equation doesn't generate superharmonics if we start from finite trigonometrical polynomial. What I said is that let's take initial configuration in the form of somewhat disturbed circle with finite number of terms. Interestingly, if we substitute this here in order to find time dependence of all parameters, we will not find superharmonics, greater than n, which is somewhat unusual for physicists dealing with nonlinear systems, starting from such simple example as unharmonic oscillator. It is because first factor is conjugate. And it means that this infinitely dimensional system can be reduced to finite number, to finite dimensional dynamical system. And this is something somewhat unusual, which attracted some attention. Schreiman and Ben-Simon in 1984 used this ansatz in multiplicative, not in additive form, which I written, and they found this dynamical system, this set of nonlinear coupled ODEs with respect to roots of this polynomial.
Sorry, which one of the original problems did this solve now? So there's no surface tension, but...
Yes, no surface tension. As you can see from here, it is radial geometry. It is radial geometry. Without this, it is just a perfect circle, which if you substitute here, you will see what you would expect to see anyway. But interesting question is, what if we perturb it somewhat? I repeat that instead of expected perturbation picture, how these small coefficients behave, it was found that we have set of nonlinear ODEs of the first order with respect to these coefficients AK and their complex conjugates.
Can I make a comment in the surface tension case?
Please.
With regard to the
number. Sure.
The selection depends upon the semi-saturated.
For dendrites, answer is yes, as was shown by Jim Langer.
Also for
that's what you are right, yes. Yes, you are right. It was shown already after all the story by Kessler and Levin, I believe. You are right, yes. Mm-hmm. Everything I wanted. Let me use last few minutes before the break just to show you simple example, which shows you most of secrets and even beauty of this system. Let me perturb initial circle by a monochromatic wave, so that initially is a circle which is slightly perturbed by monochromatic wave. After I perform differentiations, both with respect to time and phi here, and replace results in the left-hand side of this master equation, I will obtain two equations. Perhaps it's particularly easy why super harmonics are not generated. I will obtain this equation and this equation. N-1. First equation is just nothing but the fact that area changes linearly with time, because left-hand side is nothing but area occupied by this bubble. Second equation indicates instability of the process.
Sorry, I can't read what's in the denominator on the right-hand side of the second equation. R-naught.
Initial value of parameter R, Andreas. Okay, so you can see from here that while this deviation grows without bound, which indicates lack of physical, lack of ultraviolet regularization, this is just shows that area grows linearly in time. Of course, eventually A reaches such a point while growing, that conformality breaks. I mean that all critical points when z prime equals zero eventually hit unit circle in this symmetrical picture from inside the circle, and because boundary stops to be analytic here, it stops to be conformal here, it stops to be conformal here, and here we have cusps. This cusps was correctly interpreted as a result of instability, a result of lack of regularization on the small scale, and it was suggested that regardless of these beautiful mathematical observations, we have no choice but to introduce some regularization, and physically it is surface tension. Well, Ilya, we should make small break, right? This observation was interesting, and I asked myself if this dynamical system can be integrated exactly in quadratures. And I just substituted this finite polynomial ansatz inside this equation, which some of my colleagues may call Laplacian growth equation. And it was interesting that if you obtain this finite dimensional dynamical system with respect to A sub k, starting from the highest mode, which is linear equation, you can integrate it up to first integrals of motion and quadratures, and coming back one by one, you find constants of integration.
So
Ben Simon Schreiman took this finite polynomial ansatz in multiplicative form, and they considered roots of this polynomial with respect to exponent in minus I phi as dynamical variables, and I thought to try to integrate this exactly because this dynamical system was so inviting.
We wouldn't do it except for some examples.
I tell you what I and you know from their publication.
No, I don't remember, so I don't know in that sense.
Well, I told you what they did in 1984. They obtained set of nonlinear ODEs with respect to roots of this polynomial. Mm-hmm. I asked myself if this dynamical system can be integrated up to constants of integration. In order to do it, I represented this in this additive form which you see on the blackboard, and found that the last equation for mode A sub n, perhaps one can even notice that this highest mode, nth mode, does not interact with any mode in this when A dot n enters. This helps me immediately to integrate this. Initial times r in n minus 1 over r initial in n minus 1. Because I put here parenthesis n minus 2. Then, step by step back, we got list of first integrals of motion, constants of integration, and last constant of integration was ratio of area with respect to time. Indeed, area grows linearly here in time, because this asymptotical way of harmonic function P is the same as fixed flux for this flow through the whole system. And later already, I found that this constants of motion is nothing but analytical, or some people say harmonic moments, which Richardson found in 1972 for interior Hillisch problem. And now let me speak about more mathematics, about some properties of this equation which reveal quite non-trivial mathematical structures behind this equation, which gave rise to interesting relationships with integrable hierarchies. Specifically, it's equivalent to dispersionless, I would say, semi-classical limit of two-dimensional Toda hierarchy, and also has relations with two-matrix model, and through these chains is related to quantum gravity. But it is another story, which started in the end of 90s, when we started to work with Anton Zabrodin from Moscow and Paul Wigman from Chicago. I would not dwell too much on it, just mention. Let me tell you what Stan Richardson, a remarkable mathematician from Edinburgh, have discovered in 1972. He considered interior Laplacian growth problem, which is what I spoke before, with the difference that viscous fluid was inside in D plus, while outside in D minus was inviscid fluid, dead zone, nothing happens in terms of our variables there. He found the following remarkable thing, that all these moments, analytic moments, which are geometrical which geometrically characterize, excuse me, please. Definitely, yes. It's interior problem, Dima, yes. All these geometrical quantities which characterize the domain stay the same. The only whole time, the whole time dynamics is reduced to the lowest moment, area actually. It's remarkable. Highly nonlinear, infinitely dimensional system with really non-trivial time dependence of a complex unstable interface, found to be equivalent to time dynamics of only one of these moments, lowest one, which we can safely identify with time. And question is whether totality of all this C sub n's is or is not enough to characterize the shape for 100%. The answer is yes, it is. Provides a boundary is analytic and then inverse potential.
Starlight.
No. Yes, but we go here much farther because in two dimensions you don't need star likes and can imagine anything, and by Riemann theorem you still have one-to-one, you still have a conformal map with proper normalization in infinity. So here you are not restricted to star-like domains. Yes, and let me tell you, I mentioned analytic boundary. If you permit here corners, then counterexample shown in his book and found by Andrei Gabrielov indeed takes place. But we are speaking about analytical domains. Excuse me?
Yes.
Whether plus or minus here, you either pump in or out. Well, now it's time to come back to Schwarz function. Let me write what people call Cauchy transforms.
Sorry, just one word, clarifying thing. So when it's interior problem, and the pump is inside the domain D plus, then this boundary condition log Z is replaced, right? It's now around the origin or something like that, right?
It's the same.
Why?
It's the same because logarithm of absolute value of Z still is correct for both infinite or zero.
Which outside is constant because it's inviscid fluid.
Yes, everything works here, but you should switch in and out. Even this remarkably the same, because if it's plus, it's infinite. Well, said enough. Origin is point of pump. Well, This is a Cauchy transform. It is integral over the domain D, D plus here, and with Cauchy kernel, inverse Z prime minus Z. Let me switch again Cartesian to conjugate, and let me perform transformation from volume to contour integral. I hope you believe me that we obtained Cauchy type integral with a Cauchy kernel and density, which remarkably is nothing but Schwarz function we introduced. Schwarz function for the closed curve can be decomposed in formal power expansion to Lorentz series with S plus and S minus. Free term we traditionally put in the first sum. Thus, you can see from this integral that it is either one or second half of this Schwarz function with a sign depending whether Z belongs to interior or exterior of this domain.
I think it's Z prime, no? Z prime is where you evaluate it.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, S plus and S minus refer to whether you come from in and outside?
Yes. Because Schwarz function is well defined only locally nearby this closed contour, the power expansion, formal power expansion, is full Lorentz expansion. At the same time, from point of view of physics, from point of view of inverse potential problem, please have a look. We have started from the gradient of Newtonian potential in two dimensions created by fictitious density equals one inside the domain Z. So here we have a match. Strangely enough, this system. First of all, the one-to-one correspondence between singularities now can be explicitly taken advantage from to generate different non-trivial finite dimensional time-dependent solutions. Please have a look to these two equations. What follows from them is that singularities of Schwarz function are such points, are images of inverse singularities of conformal map. It doesn't take a lot to contemplate on a little this system and agree with me.
So these are singularities of what problem now?
There are two analytic functions, conformal mapping Z of W, such that when on unit circle it describes the boundary we are investigating, and there is another analytic function, which is Schwarz function. Its return value is Z bar if Z indeed belongs to the interface, but it doesn't belong, but it is something else outside. It is Schwarz reflection. Simplest way to think about this is to believe that this is an ideal mirror, curvilinear mirror, and if you are quite close to it, Schwarz reflection, Schwarz image is nothing but image. If, however, you move out for finite distance, you can lose image, which means here that you shifted a sheet of Riemannian surface, or in geometrical optics, you are just too far. Ilya, you have a question.
So, yes, so I'm coming back to my question here. So, I know that
exterior and interior maps have totally different singularities.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
How can that be that Schwarz function has just one set of singularities?
I didn't say that. Let me be very specific. Schwarz function has all singularities all conformal map have. However,
which conformal map?
Let's start from simple example I already discussed. Conformal map out to out. The statement is that all singularities of conformal map from outside unit circle to outside the domain have one-to-one correspondence of singularities of S plus of Z, which by definition is analytic inside the contour, and therefore all its singularities are located outside the contour. The other way around is also correct. If you instead consider conformal map, say, in to in, you will have the same story, however, here S minus already. Actually, S minus, as can be easily figured out, coefficients of this expansion are also analytic moments, however, interior analytic moments, which physically correspond that it is interior of a domain occupied by matter, which creates Newtonian fictitious potential in far field. So then
your statement must be corrected, because you said all the singularities of Z have one-to-one correspondence with singularities of F, which is not true as I see now.
Part of this single... S plus, yes.
There are not point singularities most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know...
Branch points.
Point or cuts... My statement is that if it's in, it's this, if it's out, it's this, but strictly speaking, not all. Yes, sure. You're right. You're right. Now, about algebraic curves. Because of this one-to-one correspondence of singularities, and because of remarkable observation that all singularities of the functions of Schwarz function S plus part of this Schwarz function are time independent. In a second you will see why it is. But even now you already know from this expansion that if all coefficients of power expansion of S plus are constants, which I have mentioned, the whole S plus is constant. From that fact, we just take any initial our conformal map function f, let's take it any rational function with top polynomial have one more degree than bottom polynomial in order to get a simple pole at infinity, and all singularities of this function, which are roots of q, have their counterparts in the singularities of S plus, which are constants of motion. This helps us to recover time dependence of singularities of F. Time comes through the fact that the whole area, which also can be calculated in terms of initial ansatz, initial form of shape, can be identified with time. Shortly, the following, all this problem can be recast in terms of Schwarz function in this simple form, where S is Schwarz function moving in time t, and W, which is logarithm of W small I used earlier, is nothing but complex potential, velocity of complex potential. Velocity is just W prime.
What stands in front of W?
Excuse me?
What is number two?
Oh.
Coefficient two is here. Coefficient two is here. Let's have a look here. I repeat that W is an analytic function. It's an analytic function which real part is pressure. It means that everywhere outside the boundary, it is free of singularities, besides infinity, where it's logarithmic. But since we differentiate here, it's a simple zero at the infinity. Therefore, it follows that outside the contour, all right-hand side is free of singularities. I would say WZ plus just doesn't exist. No singularities outside. Schwarz function, however, necessarily accepts circles. Schwarz function, generally speaking, has singularities outside. Consequence is that all the singularities are time invariant. That
for ellipse, Schwarz function would not have singularities outside.
For ellipse, it has a simple pole at infinity, doesn't? Therefore, if it's not ellipse, then there are non-trivial singularities in finite part of the complex plane, Dima. Yes. And interest, just one sentence which helped us to recover relation of this structure with integrable hierarchies is that we can write the following, based on what I said, we have this. Omega capital is just primitive of Schwarz function. It's what Dima Havinson and his colleagues call Schwarz potential, or at least real part of it. Just indefinite integral of Schwarz function. Formally, it looks like an action from analytical mechanics. Formally, W looks like Hamiltonian, and Schwarz function looks like a moment, a canonically conjugate to the coordinate Z. Because physical time process takes place, can be safely identified with a moving area, which is lowest moment, T naught, then it is just suggestive form to think that we can also release dynamics of other moments. Because for Laplacian growth of such kind, only lowest moment moves, but others are constant. But generally speaking, all moments can move. This is arbitrary dynamics. And from this form, we can start multi-timing formalism, considering each harmonic moments, which we can vary separately as a separate flow, a separate time.
Sorry, HK was previously called MK?
No. AK is just partial derivative of this generating functional, Andreas, with respect to TK. But TK is nothing but harmonic moment in this.
So that's
TK.
Yes.
TK.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. By reasons which I don't want to dwell now, it has conjugate sum also. And from this formalism, we can obtain Poisson bracket symplectic structure, which we can already see even in the initial form, because it is just Jacobian, which is zero, Jacobian of ZZ bar to T phi is zero. Poisson bracket, in fact. In this way, it was observed that it is quasi-classical limit of quantum formulation of integrable hierarchies. I believe that I would stop here for a short while. I would like to make few conclusions in the end. And I would be glad to introduce you and invite to replace me my co-author, Artem Abanov, who will tell you more about recent interesting results, jointly with Anton Zabrodin, regarding self-similar growth in different geometrical pictures and Laplacian growth.
Alright, but it's not new results. All results which I am going to describe already know, with just a different point of view on the known problem. Because you know how it was solved before. But I have to start with more weighted things. First of all, when Mark was writing something like this, what actually meant all the time is this one. Right, so it's just impression, and if anyone has problem with that, that definition of f bar, the function is bar, just the definition is. Okay, so,
found easier for myself to think about this way. If you have a Taylor expansion.
Yes, yeah, if you have a Taylor expansion, then you conjugate the coefficients and the arguments are the same.
The microphone. I apologize, absolutely. Yes, sure.
It's working.
Well, if the green light is on, then it's working.
It's on, yes.
Yes. The green light,
yeah.
You see it.
Yeah, the green light is on. Okay. So, first of all, I have to say a little bit about the Schwarz function. So, this is the definition of our curve. So, this is Schwarz function of a given curve. First of all, the nice property of the Schwarz function is that it has no parameterization, internal parameterization, like say conformal map, which implies some particular parameterization. If you describe a curve with the Schwarz function, you don't have any parameterization whatsoever, and this is a good thing. And the bad thing is that if you know Schwarz function, actually to draw the curve is not a trivial problem. Then you have to imply some like computer techniques to do. And another property of the Schwarz function is that if I now take this this formula, this the definition, and apply S bar to it, what I will find there's a new identity, right? Like let me write it this way. So Z. So what I have now is Z equals S bar of S of Z.
Right. So it's just a matter of notation on the top line.
Right,
S
right.
Bar dependent on Z and not on Z bar.
Yes, yes. So I apply S bar here. That's why I actually introduce this notation. Just S bar to Z bar. Right. If I apply S bar to Z bar, then from here I will get out Z eventually, right? So what I have is Z equals S bar SZ. So it's called unitarity for property of Schwarz function called unitarity. Right. And now because it's Z and Z here and Z here, it works everywhere, right, on the Z plane. Okay, and the definition of a Schwarz function, which I will need, is the connection of the Schwarz function with the conformal map. It's this one, F bar of 1 over W, and Z equals F of W. Okay, this is the connection, and Mark mentioned it, and actually derived it, that if I know a conformal map from say outside of unit circle to outside of my curve, then the Schwarz function is nothing but the F bar of 1 over W, and Z is F of W. So that can be seen as the definition of a Schwarz function, of how to construct Schwarz function knowing conformal map. And of course, it is not trivial to reconstruct conformal map if you know the Schwarz function. It's not a trivial problem. Okay. So let me give you an example of a Schwarz function, which is Schwarz function of an ellipse. And I'll show some property of it on ellipse too. So the Schwarz function of an ellipse, say if you have an ellipse and on the Z plane and circle on W plane, and we have a conformal map from outside to outside, which is given by F of W equals W plus A over W. Okay. Then what we have here is the ellipse, which has half axis. One is 1 plus A, and the other is 1 minus A. And the focal point is at point 2 square root of A. In this situation, that's minus. So that's the ellipse which I have. So the Schwarz function of such an ellipse will have the following form. 1 plus a squared over 2az minus 1 minus a squared divided by 2a square root of z squared minus 4a. So it has this Schwarz function has a cut, branch cut, going from one focal point to another. And that's pretty much the only singularity, except the infinity. Or I can write it, I can take expansion over close to infinity of this Schwarz function and write that this is AZ plus 1 minus A squared 1 over Z plus A and 1 over A squared 1 over Z cubed and so forth.
There's no 1 over Z squared term.
No, there's no, only odd powers of the components. So this part of Schwarz function here is what's marked S plus. And this part of Schwarz function is what's marked S minus. Now, you can check that it's correct, because if A equals 0, then what you have here is a Schwarz function, which is 1 over Z, which is just extrapolated. Right, so expansion is sort of correct. And another thing is that you can check is that the residue of the Schwarz function at infinity, at 0, is nothing but the area of the circle. It's actually area divided by pi. Okay, and that's how it must be, because the area is nothing but the integral S of Z dz.
What do you mean by the residue?
Yeah. The coefficient in front of 1 over Z is the area. Okay. So if I now try to take this integral using this function, that's what I got. Right? And then that's of course the general property.
It's zero. It's not a pole. It's some residue.
The
coefficient.
All right. And another properties we'll have to use this one. Let's take a contour and L is a natural parameter on it, the length of it on the contour. Then what I can write immediately is that dL equals square root of dz times dz bar, which tells me that that's equal to, using Schwarz function, equals to square root of S prime of the dz. Right. Okay, from here, first of all, what I see is dz equals dl divided by square root of S bar over z, and what it means is that S prime over z of modulus equals to 1 when z is on my contour, and because dl and dz must have the same model, the same absolute value. Another thing which comes from here is that vector, if you think of that complex number s prime of z as a vector, then that vector is the tangent vector to the contour, the unit tangent vector to the contour at point z, right?
I thought the first equation defines the arc length of the contour, which I can only define on the contour.
Right. So all of this is just on the contour. I just don't want to go away from the contour. Everything what's here is on the contour. Right? So what I have here is just on the contour, I have that S prime of Z is first of all, it's unity. Uh-huh. Right? The model of unity, and the direction of it is just the tangential to the curve, right? Okay, and okay, that's pretty much about the simple properties. Now let's imagine that I want to describe a contour dynamics in terms of Schwarz function. So what I have is not is is, is a, some contour at 10 t. So it's described by Schwarz function z at 10 t, and at some other time it's described by Schwarz function s of z at t plus dt. So two different contours. Let's imagine that this point of a contour z, it actually moves perpendicular to the contour at this point, and that length is some v perpendicular times dt. Then what I can write for the first contour, that z bar equals s zt, and for this point of the second contour, I write that z bar plus v bar dt equals s of z plus v dt, t plus dt. So from here, I immediately say that v bar equals, the velocity is always perpendicular. I'm talking here only the velocity which is perpendicular to the contour, because other velocity doesn't make sense for the contour dynamics. So what I have here is v perpendicular bar equals v perpendicular times s prime plus s dot. Dot means differentiation with time, and the prime is means differentiation with z. Now the condition that v bar is perpendicular to the contour vector L, which is vector tangential to the contour, means that the real part of v perpendicular bar divided by square root of s prime equals zero. Because the square root of the prime is nothing but 1 over square root of s prime is just the vector tangential to the curve. Right? So from these two equations, what you will find is that s dot equals 2 v bar, in perpendicular bar. So this is correct for any contour dynamics, and in particular for Laplacian growth dynamics, what I have is v perpendicular bar equals w prime, where w is the potential. So w is a function w equals minus p plus I psi. So for the Laplacian growth, what I have.
Sorry. So the things are in the wrong, this parallel type.
Yeah, this
is independent equations?
Right. Those are independent equations. They have both V and V bar.
And they're all both obtained from the previous line?
No, this equation obtained from this line. Uh-huh. Right? And this is a condition that what I'm actually talking about here is the velocity which is perpendicular to the quantum.
In what sense is it perpendicular? It's not drawn perpendicular.
It's drawn perpendicular to this one. And the rest is by drawn.
Okay. Right.
Okay. So for the Laplacian growth, then the main equation of Laplacian growth in terms of the Schwarz function is this one. That s dot equals 2 w prime. Okay, so that's exactly where my mark stopped, more or less. But I want to show how it can be, how this simple equation can be used to solve some problems. Let's say the problem of self-similar growth. So let's imagine that we have a contour which is growing self-similarly. It means that if a contour have point z on it, then at a later time, point r times z will be on a later quantum at a later time, where t of course depends on, r depends on t, and but r does not depend on z. So what I have just a dilatation.
V per bar is the same as w prime.
Yes, for Laplace, this is Laplacian growth. This is for any contour dynamic. This is for Laplacian growth. This is the only equation here. For Laplacian growth.
But is this equation as dot equals 2 v prime perfect is following from the previous equation?
Yes, those two plus the fact that this is one. Okay, so I have just a dilatation of contour, right? So let's imagine that at some point my contour has a Schwarz function f of z. Then at any different point of time, what I have now is z bar over r of t equals s z over r of t. So I have my Schwarz function, which is time dependent Schwarz function now of z of t equals r of t times s of z divided by r of t.
So that's for particular kind of evolution.
Yes, this is just for self similar evolution. Right. So if I have just a dilatation, I assume what it is other contours which can be just dilatated in time. Right. So I want to know all of those contours. So then I assume that's what I have, and then the Schwarz function dynamics must have this form. Okay, so I plug this equation into this form of the Schwarz function into the first equation, and what I will have is some r dot times S minus Z S is not must be equal to say 2 W prime. Now I rescale those variables, so I rescale them.
There's no Z derivative.
Sorry, this is prime. Okay. So what? But now see, look at this formula. This is the only place where time is. There's no time anywhere. This equation, right? So the only piece which depends on time is r. It means that this must be constant, right? And then I can just simply drop it out. Say write a constant here.
Why w prime is not time dependent?
It's a dilatation, right? So it will depend on time the same way. It will be just z divided by r. Everywhere there. And so it's all dilatation, it's conformal. Right? So now.
Big W is this whatever.
It's a potential, it's a complex potential, right? It's a complex function.
Is it time
independent? It will be time dependent on this plate. It will be z over r of t. Right? So this will be the only time dependence. But I have actually rescaled everything. I rescaled in this equation z. By z divided by r of t, right. and then nothing depends on time anymore. This equation is valid everywhere on the plane, right? Whew. Okay. This constant actually connected to can be connected to the area of the curve if just you take the integral of this equation and use the partial derivative, partial integration, and you immediately see it. Now. This equation is actually very, 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 very interesting one because let's take the plus part of it, the part which has no singularities inside the contour, right. And so all the singularities outside the contour, but W prime does not have any singularities outside the contour, so what we have is S naught minus Z S naught prime of Z equals zero. Is it plus part of S? Sorry. Let me write it just plus one and drop zero. So this is zero. Okay. The solution of this equation is very simple. S plus equals A to Z. And so if you look at here, that we see that it's exactly the part of the ellipse. And moreover, ellipse is the only contour which has S plus equals just a linear function of Z. So the only self-similar solution, non-singular, I should say, self-similar solution is the ellipse of Laplacian growth. Now, there is nevertheless some singular solution of that. And let me just, I don't have time, unfortunately, for anything interesting here, but let me consider solution with n identical singular growth. Like this. So assume that I have solution of this kind. And well, you can see that it's nothing but the growth of one finger in a wedge. If I produce wedge here. Now, solution of this kind must have a discontinuity of function on the wedge, right? But for that discontinuities, again, I can take this formula and take the discontinuities of this formula across the edge. Now, W prime does not have any discontinuity, right? On here. So what I will have is the discontinuity of S minus Z discontinuity of S prime equals 0. So that bracket means discontinuity of a function on here. So that whole equation works on just on say this gamma. Well, again, I can solve this equation, and I see that the discontinuity of S of Z equals some number times Z. Nothing else, right? Now, I take this equation and use the definition of Green of Schwarz function in terms of the conformal map. And what I see is the discontinuity of the conformal map on over W equals C times the conformal map itself. On the image of the gamma. Now from the symmetry point of view, I know that the images of gamma will be some lines which go like this. On W plane. This is W plane, now this is Z plane. Okay. Now that tells me that the only singularities of the conformal map which I have is some discontinuity on some lines in W plane, on the straight lines. After that, I can reconstruct using that fact, I can reconstruct the total F of W, and the total F of W will be the solution of this equation. And let me just write it, and I think that I stop on that point, unfortunately, because it will be C over 2 pi I times 1 over integral over from 1 to infinity W F of W divided by 1 minus W in power of n times in power of n dV. Okay. So that n, the number n, is just the number of the fingers which are gone. So I have an integral equation for the conformal map. That integral equation can be solved. There are different ways to solve it. Anton Zabrodin was just looking at it and solve it, actually. But I have a different way to solve it. And in others, and you will find the solution F of W, which is, I don't know if I wrote it down somewhere. Yeah, I should have. W times 1 minus W power of 1 over n times the The time is a hypergeometric function which I want to write anyway, because I'm not going anywhere from here. Okay, so and the last point is that the number C, which can be seen from the fact that from the Schwarz function is nothing but the image, the mirror image of the point, is connected to this angle of the fjord angle of the growing.
So the argument of the hypergeometric function is W itself?
It's W in minus n's power.
So it's coming to the origin as a straight line?
Yes, yeah. Coming to the origin to the straight line.
So it's a wedge?
Yes, exactly.
Mention the relation with well-known potential in Schrödinger.
You didn't give me much time for it. That was my next...
Don't blame.
Who else could I blame?
I said, what?
Yeah, so okay, I stop here, and if you want to ask me questions, I will. Okay. Okay.
What is the relation to Schrödinger potential?
Thank you for this question. okay, I'll go here.
For example, for a simple thing, for a simple case, the, for instance, only two sectors.
Well, with two sectors, you have to be careful how you do summation. Then it's exactly the point where it's not working. You have to be careful that way.
Four sectors, right?
Four sectors will work. Yes.
Four sectors. Is simple?
Yes, there is a huge simplification of it. I don't remember the formula on top of my hand, but I have it in my mind.
Still hypergeometric.
No, the hypergeometric function is what simplified. It's some power.
The parameters of the hypergeometric functions are rational functions of n.
There are two parameters here. This angle.
No, parameters of f.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The parameters of f connected with theta and phi.
Okay, question. Is this algebraic curve?
Well, this point is not, right?
No, it cannot be. If it's not trivial, hypergeometric
function. That's what I'm asking. But sometimes it degenerates. Okay, question. Is this algebraic curve or not?
Well, this point is not algebraic, right? The rest is algebraic.
So
that's the only point where it's not algebraic.
That means the curve is given by a finite polynomial of the finite order of x and y. Can you write P of x and y equals 0? Just write it.
Okay, P.
P.
P of x and y
equals 0.
Equals 0.
If this is a polynomial, it's defined as algebraic curve. Finite order polynomial.
Yeah.
Question: those your curves are polynomials? If theta, Ivan suggested that if theta is rational, it's commensurate with 2 pi, then it's algebraic. Ivan suggested.
Well, okay. I don't know the answer to this question. I really don't. I never looked at this. So.
But I
would assume that the answer will be no on this question. Actually,
the answer depends on theta and phi.
Yes.
There is a whole family,
and that's
given n.
Yes.
Which is number of seven.
Yes. Yes. So for given theta, there is a whole family of solutions which are all parameterized by this angle.
And where is this family in the equation? Is this C depends on phi, or where is this family?
Yes, that C has a very simple connection to the cos of phi.
Okay.
Can you write the exact for it? Cosine or sine phi C?
C. Yeah. Sure, I can. Which is that C equals 2i sine phi. And it can be, you can get it very, very simply from this picture. But let me show you first, and then I go to your questions about the potential. And if you have. Let's say that this is our x-axis, and this is our fingers which grow. Let's look at the point here, which has x plus I naught. This angle, and I think that this is symmetric, and this angle is phi. So this is a straight line. coming to the center. So what I have is the image of this x plus I naught. It's actually here. Okay. So what I have now s of x plus I naught, and I have to take bar, and that will be the image, equals x times e I phi. Because if you have a contour, you have point z here. If you think of this of this contour as a mirror, then the image of z is given by s of z bar.
Implicitly assuming that the angle of the finger is the same as the angle between the fingers here?
No. So all I'm taking, this is a mirror, yes. Right? And I want to take this point,
right,
and reflect it through this mirror.
Right.
The only thing which I need is this angle.
Why is close to the other edge of the finger then?
Well, okay, let me draw it like this, right, and take it here, and then it will know. But it doesn't matter. I mean, this is mirror, right? So if you're looking at this, you don't see this line. So you're taking this point and see where is the mirror image of it. And it's somewhere here. And because it's a straight line, you know that the mirror image will be in this point. Right? On the other hand, if you take this point,
you assume that this is actually a straight line.
Yes, sure. If you take now point x minus I naught and take a mirror image, that will be x minus and minus I phi. So now you take the difference between that and conjugate, and what you find is that s of x, the difference, the jump of the function, equals x to I x times sine phi. And that, so we have the jump of the Schwarz function proportional to x. And it's exactly what we have here, and the coefficient of proportional is to I times sine phi. Okay, so that sense, the connection to the potential is the following. That can be can be seen from this consideration. I can normalize. I can put additional normalization to this equation. I can say here that f of 1 equals 0. So this point is always goes over here. N plus symmetrical. But that's enough for now. So if I plug it in this equation, what I will find. What I will find is that, let me say that this is will be sine at c divided by 2 pi I, and integral from 1 to infinity f of v divided by v power of n minus 1 equals 1. Right? That is my condition. Now I take that 1 and plug it in here, so I assume that there is number 1 here. So I think I will have two integrals, and I plug them together, and what I will find a new equation of this form, that 2 pi I divided by sine phi.
So Artem, sorry. The guy just came in. I think this room is reserved for 12:30.
Okay.
Right potential.
All right. So then what I will see is that this is some equation for eigenvalues of some operator. I can find an operator which is commute with that integral operator. And that operator is a differential operator which has this form, omega d omega squared plus, let me say, n squared phi over pi minus 1 w n power divided by 1 minus w n power. That integral operator which I have will commute with this operator, with this differential operator. So they have the common set of eigenfunctions, and this is nothing but a Schrödinger equation, which has known solution, and that's exactly the solution.
But what is the potential? What is the
special Taylor
potential?
This is potential, right?
That's potential in the Schrödinger equation, not potential.
There's potential of Schrödinger equation, yes. That's what we are talking about. So the time is over.
If possible, one short answer.
So we have about at most 10 minutes because people
I
will be coming.
I need 3 minutes only. Mm-hmm. With my phone, I use your time. Just a couple of things which I think are worth to mention given the nature of this program at Santa Barbara. First of all, it is easy to show that this equation, which is nothing but area preserved differently, is equivalent to the following linear integral nonlinear equation.
It doesn't matter actually. Thank you. Is equivalent to the following integral linear equation, integral differential equation. It was shown in 84 by Schramm and Ben-Simon. Equation with this Schwarz kernel arises in Lerner equation and actually is just consequence of Adamar variation formula for the green function of a domain. Perhaps recasting of this Laplacian form in such a of Laplacian growth in such a form is instructive to think about not deterministic and continuous, but about discrete and stochastic way of this density of this integral. That's first comment which I wanted to mention. Indeed, these two are equivalent. One can easily check it out, and let me not do it now. I would also like to say that we discussed mostly Laplacian growth. However, even well-known nonlinear equations, such as Kertész-Weierstrass equation, has very interesting and unusual form, being recast in terms of Schwarz function. Just imagine a contour, like was shown in the 90s and even earlier found by different people. If this contour is governed by such law of motion as tangential derivative of local curvature is velocity, normal velocity, of course. Tangential velocity of a contour doesn't have much physical sense. Then the following equation, actually modified Kertész-Weierstrass equation, is valid for the time dependence of curvature where spatial coordinate is an arc length. Well-known Miura transformation connects modified Kertész-Weierstrass with just Kertész-Weierstrass. And in terms of this differential geometry, it just means.
So which dynamics goes into this MKD?
Dynamics for the curvature of this.
Of a plus and growth?
No.
Which one?
No.
V will be MKD. Oh, okay.
If it is modified KdV, then KdV itself is valid, I forgot here, coefficient, perhaps 1/2. Perhaps it doesn't matter. Then U is governed by KdV itself. Whether plus or minus here, imaginary unit here is or not. In terms of differential geometry, U is just Schwarz derivative. It's just curvature prime plus k square. But in Schwarz function terms, if you ask what is dynamics of Schwarz function of this curve with such law of motion, it is this equation. It is also well-known integrable equation, Diem equation, Hari-Diem equation.
Mixed derivative on
the left,
what is it that on the left?
It is mixed derivative, but if dz, d Schwarz function, dz, I will call h, then h dh dt is this nonlinear PDE, which was shown by Martin Kraskal in the 70s, is also integrable and, as was later shown, equivalent to Carteverde Vries equation after some non-local change of coordinates. This equation also appears if we consider non-zero surface tension, which was not part of discussion here, with the coefficient I here and the additional term. I thought that this is an interesting remark. Last remark I would like to say, without writing a formula, that set of these conserved quantities we have discussed for two-dimensional Laplacian growth, remarkably, can be extended for arbitrarily dimensional growth, let's not go too far, three-dimensional growth, if instead of Laplacian equation, it's rather general, or at least very broad class of elliptic equations, which govern scalar field U, such that the rest of formulation for contour dynamics is the same, with only difference that normal velocity is no longer gradient of U, but with coefficient P. Remarkably, this dynamics also enjoys infinite set of conserved quantities, which are analogs of these harmonic moments, where integral over the domain which is moving is no longer powers of z, but instead are zero eigenvalues of this operator L, eigenfunctions of zero eigenvalue of this operator L, and it gives us also interesting extension of Laplacian growth to other kinds of contour dynamics. And here I would like to complete my presentation. Thank you. Our presentation is our
I suggest that if there are any remaining questions, so let me